Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Tuesday to you, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Last night, Monday Night Football, I came up with this thought. Boy, NFL teams will say all the right things about their opponent, right? You see it in college where they're like, oh no, so-and-so, Maryland Eastern Shore is as good as anybody we faced all season. You hear that a lot. But in the NFL, it's more true, right? Because we have professional football players. The Miami Dolphins are a winless football team, but they have professional football players. And they're professional football players that are playing hard. They're playing hard for their own reputation, and they're playing hard to actually win football games. But boy, oh boy, I don't care what Mike Tomlin says. I don't care what Mason Rudolph says. I don't care what James Conner says. I don't care what anybody on the Steelers' defense says. They did not want to be the team that loses to the Miami Dolphins. And no team now wants to be the team to lose to the Miami Dolphins. It's almost as if that Mason Rudolph at the beginning of the game, where he threw a couple of interceptions and looked really bad and he was throwing balls all over the place, it was almost as if they were nervous that they were actually going to do that. That they were going to cost them an opportunity at home to win a game and get closer to 500 and instead be the laughing stock of the league. Even though they would never say that in public. They would never come out and say, boy, this is awful. How could we lose to a football team like that? Oh, they would say all the great things about Miami and Ryan Fitzpatrick and Brian Flores and all of those things. They would have given them all the credit in the world. But you could almost get the feeling very early in that game last night, they were really nervous that they were going to lose at home to this football team in front of that crowd. The last time the Steelers lost a Monday Night Football game at home was 1991 against the New York Giants. 91 was the last home game they lost on Monday Night Football. That's a span of 17 games, 18 games, I think, is the record. That's a great streak. So you know if you go to a Steelers Monday Night Football game, there's chances are you're going to see them win. And throughout those years, they've had bad teams. They've had teams that didn't make the playoffs, teams that struggled with different quarterbacks and whatnot, but always found a way to win on Monday Night Football at home. And boy, it looked bad early. How did they turn it around? A lot of help from Miami. We'll talk a little bit about that. Get into Game 6 of the World Series tonight. Join us on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Roll along on a Tuesday, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. So Monday Night Football last night, listen, I understand if many of you didn't watch it. It wasn't appealing. The Steelers are an okay team. The Dolphins aren't a very good team. To be honest with you, I don't even know what was sellable about it when they scheduled the game at the beginning of the season. What did people think the Dolphins were going to be? Maybe the Josh Rosen thing excited them. But, you know, when they go over the games for Monday Night Football, there's different caveats. Everybody in the league has to be on national TV at least once. So some get Thursday nights, some get Sunday nights, some get Monday nights. But the Monday Night games are really trying to fine-tune it to get the best possible matchup that you can. And the other networks do have a say on what games they keep. But this was really unappealing, even if Roethlisberger was healthy. It didn't look like a game that you would put on Monday Night Football.
No, in fact, it looked like ESPN was trying to sell you 1970s version Steelers Dolphins.
Oh, I know.
Every 5 minutes there was a clip like, you remember this one? Do you remember this play?
Guys, I wanted to yell at the TV. Guys, these are 45-year-old clips. All right? Unless you're speaking to a nursing home or an old folks home, you are missing out on a majority of Americans tuning in to watch this game. Not a lot of people were alive to watch Larry Zonka run through defenses in the early 70s. I mean, you're talking about, what, two generations of people watching football that have no idea who these players are or watch them, or they're just part of the history of the game. I mean, they're selling you 1970s success last night on television.
Not only that, I've never looked at these two teams as rivals.
Oh, never, never.
Never. And that's what I was kind of feel like it was being thrown at me. It was like, oh, these two great storied programs, rivals.
Like, if you're 22 years old and you're watching that, you're like, what is that, 1,000 years ago? What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, I remember that clip.
Yeah. Terry Bradshaw? You mean the goofy guy talking football on my TV and is in some wacky commercials, used to be a player, giving away $250,000 of his own money in some contest, actually was a star in this league? What are you kidding?
Yeah,
like, imagine if you're a kid watching this and you're and they just keep saying, forget what you got now. These two teams 45 years ago were really good.
These were the juggernauts in the NFL.
Yeah.
The other thing that stood out to me in this game, they love them some Dan Marino.
They love Dan Marino, right? Mm. Perfect storm from Pittsburgh, played for the Dolphins, come together. Two groups of people that really like him.
Yeah, where did you grow up? Parkview? That, I heard that. Was that the name of the street?
I think so, yeah.
Like mentioned like only 75,000 times?
Exactly. Now, I was nervous in this game, man. Boy, Mason Rudolph looked like he had never played football in the history of his life. Like he just won some contest and he was going to be the Steelers starting quarterback for the day.
Well, he wasn't over his concussion, Tony.
No, he threw that first pass he threw was terrible. Now, he threw another pick that got overturned, but, I mean, it was essentially a pick because it bounced off the guy's hand, but landed in the Dolphins' hand, and he stepped out of bounds as he was juggling. I thought it was a legit interception.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that one was entirely his fault, though. I mean, bad throw and bad coverage.
But it was in coverage. I mean, it was not in very easy coverage.
He was trying to squeeze that in like Aaron Rodgers would, and he's no Aaron Rodgers.
The one that's on record as the interception was terrible. That was a terrible throw.
It was a pass.
Yeah, and then the defense was like Fitzpatrick was tearing them up, and the Steelers were trying to figure out coverage. And I put out on Twitter that they basically pushed the guy into the end zone on the second touchdown.
They did.
I mean, they were trying to tackle him and they couldn't tackle him, and they were basically pushing him forward into the end zone. And the Dolphins were up 14-0. Now, listen, I was nervous because. Look, I don't expect things from the Steelers, and I'm not looking for the Steelers to come back. I just didn't want to lose to the Dolphins. I mean, I just, come on. Like, the whole season can't be defined by losing to Miami. My God. Who wants to lose to Miami? Somebody's going to lose to Miami. I think this team is going to win a game or two.
Yeah, I said this to you before the show started, was that they look like they're not actively trying to tank.
No, they're not. They're not tanking. You and I have made that point clear to people. The players don't tank. What you do in terms of tanking, that's the GM gets rid of players who are significant to the success of the team for draft picks for the future.
That's what's happening.
But, you know, Fitzpatrick is out there playing his butt off because he wants to continue to support the 7 kids that he has. I had no idea he had 7 kids.
Neither did I.
They showed them all, and I was like, wow, he's Philip Rivers part 2.
Almost.
I didn't know he had that many children.
He's one behind.
One behind. Chasing down. And then Joe Testosaurus said something about he has a child for every city he's played in. I was like, that can't possibly be, can it? I mean, maybe it is.
He's played for 8 teams.
He has bounced around the league so much, but it would be weird if each child had a different place of birth based on his dad's playing career. He should have just named every kid after the team that he played for.
Or the city.
Right. Hey, Titan. Hey, Jet. Hey, Buccaneer. I mean, my God. The Amish rifle. Listen, if you can have a career, I don't care what it is. You want to be a star quarterback in this league, that's fine. But if you can't, be Ryan Fitzpatrick. Bounce around just enough to make a lot of money and just bank it and keep playing. Figure out a way to keep staying in this league. All right, but a couple of things about last night. And then we'll get on to the World Series. Booger McFarland loves himself some Brian Flores. All right. That's obvious. Last night he was talking about the Dolphins. And listen, I get it. I understand how this works.
when you are in those positions like at ESPN or Fox or CBS, you want to be critical as a color analyst, but you don't want to be overly critical because you have a working relationship with these guys. When you get to cover a game, you're there a lot. You're there, you know, on Tuesday. You're there on Thursday. You're talking to the coaches. You're talking to players. You're trying to get inside information. If you're overly vocally critical, you know, they tend to back off a little bit. They know that you come after them. So he's trying to keep the relationships that he has with these coaches open because he knows he's going to use it in the future. But the Dolphins aren't building anything and they're not building a foundation. And when he said that, I actually was like, come on, man, that's don't sell me the Dolphins program. I understand what you're trying to do, but you don't have to sell me the Dolphins. We all get what the Dolphins are trying to do. Brian Flores is not building something in Miami. They're going to rebuild eventually, but they're not building anything now, right? He's got guys that are playing hard to try not to be 0-16, but they're not a good football team. And he's not close to cracking the code and putting himself together a good football team. We're going to see what the Dolphins are going to be like years from now. When all of the draft picks that they're trying to accumulate turn into either legitimate or illegitimate football players at the next level, they're going to score on these picks or they're not. That's what you should be looking at. Not guys on the roster now and how important they're going to be, right? You're going to get rid of most of these players down the line. Now, Flores has got a good story. He came from a hard background, grew up, toughed it out, learned that he had to work really hard to make it, you know, sleeping on somebody's couch or whatever his story was when he first started out. But that story is like every other coach's story. Sean McVay could tell you probably the same story. They all can tell you those same stories. Except Kyle Shanahan. He probably had a very cushy place to live, giving his old man. But they all have those kind of stories. They didn't make any money. They worked for peanuts. They were there all the time. They learned from the best. They spoke. His story isn't different, and it doesn't make him more special because of it. That being said, Brian Flores' ability to coach in the NFL has yet to be established. I don't care that he toughed it out when he was younger. I don't care that he slept on people's couches. I don't care that he worked really hard. I don't care that he got knocked down a few times and got back up again. That story is the same for a lot of coaches. He can either coach in this league or he can't. And that being said, the blitz on third down and 20 was a dumb call, was a bad call. And he can defend it all he wants, but that was a bad call. It allowed three guys in the secondary to try to cover the Steeler receivers, and none of them could, and Johnson went in for the touchdown on third and 20 with about 17 seconds left in the game. That's on him. That's on his defensive coordinator. They had time to draw up a very good coverage play that would have kept the Steelers in check and probably forced a long field goal. Instead, the Steelers scored a touchdown, made it 14-10. Dolphins went into halftime with a 4-point lead. But at that point, I thought the Steelers were going to win the game. That they had momentum coming back and that they were going to win. And they did. They scored 27 unanswered points against a Dolphins team that never found the scoreboard once after their second touchdown of the game. Not a field goal, not a touchdown, not anything. So, again, I would love Brian Flores to succeed. Most of Belichick's former assistants don't when they go to move on to their own gig. I would like for him to break that, but I'm not sure. And none of his backstory guarantees me that he's going to be able to do that. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But just because he slept on somebody's couch in his 20s to earn his keep in the NFL as an assistant coach and learn the ropes. Doesn't make him any more special than anybody else that's ever done it, and it doesn't give him insight to being a head coach. The buttering up of the Dolphins as an organization was a little too much. And again, I understand you need to sell the game, you need to keep selling the viewers and what they're watching, but that's a bad football team, and right now they're not coached well. It doesn't mean he can't get better at the job, but right now they're not coached well. And the Steelers almost lost this, but came through and got more confident as the game was going. They were more confident defensively. They got to Fitzpatrick, and they ended up with a very important win for them, not because it moved them to 3-4, because they didn't want to lose to the Dolphins at home. That's basically what Monday Night Football was in a nutshell. All right, Game 6 of the World Series tonight. Can Justin Verlander break a streak, a very important streak, coming up next on SB Nation AM?
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professional knows what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years, so come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, so Game 6 of the World Series, I'm sure Houston is just electric with the idea of a championship in the city. Can't wait. Last time they won it on the road, this time they could win it at home.
I think they're going to.
I do, too. I think they're winning both games. I mean, I think they're either going to win. If they lose tonight, for whatever reason, they'll win Game 7, but they'll more likely win tonight. However, Justin Verlander has an interesting World Series streak. He is 0-5.
Clayton Kershaw-esque.
A very Clayton Kershaw-esque is right. Now, this is going to be interesting, because if he does win this, and it's the clinching game, you can throw 0-5 out the window.
Yep.
You can sort of forget all about that.
Especially if he goes out and has one of those performances that just leave you in awe.
Yeah, if he does, exactly.
Where he's just dominating from the get-go.
Yeah, if he does that, now that's a big deal. Like, if he goes out and, like, strikes out 12, allows one run off three hits or something like that, and just has a performance where when he's walking off in, like, the seventh inning and you know he's done for the day and they just give him this big standing ovation, it erases all that 0-5 World Series stuff from when he was with the Tigers and last World Series with the Astros. All good. All good. Wins it and clinches it for Houston and let the celebration begin. Now, this is looking at this game, you know, tonight, and Steven Strasburg is going to try to hold on, keep the Nationals in it. Washington was held to 3 runs in 3 games in D.C. The bats are quiet. Now, we talk about momentum in baseball. It's as good as your starting pitcher. But I also think now, I don't know how much Washington is going to press, because they've got to hit, right? They've got to hit against Verlander, and they're not hitting against anybody right now.
Well, it's the same thing we were saying about the Astros last week.
Wake up.
You know, they got to wake up their bats. Astros were known all season long for just putting up runs. You know, no matter what the situation was, no matter who the batter was, they were all coming in when needed most and getting just timely base hits. Then, you know, I mean, just simple base hits. Not, you know, we're not talking about long balls. We're not talking about home runs, triples down the line, you know, doubles in the gap or whatever. We were just talking, they were just getting guys on base. They were having quality at-bats. And for the first 2 games of the series, the Astros were non-existent.
There is something about this series, and I keep going back to this. Look, I'm all for the underdog. I like the underdog story in sports. We've had numbers of them. They're fun. They're exciting. They really add a really cool flavor to a championship story. Sometimes we want the no matter what the story is, no matter how the season plays out, sometimes we want the better story to win the championship, and sometimes we want the better team to win the championship, right? The Nationals are a better story in that they lost Bryce Harper, and then they struggled early. They came back. They made the wild card. They won the wild card. They beat the heavily favored Dodgers. They got to Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander. Oh, they swept the Cardinals in between. I should go on to mention that. So they have this really kind of unique story in that they were, you know, left for dead after Harper leaves, and they were 12 games below 500, and then they got good again, and then they went through this unbelievable September and then led into this unbelievable October until this recent weekend. So they have this better story, but they're not the better team, right? And I don't care what people say about them and, oh, but they've got this, you know, they're sneaky good or, you know, whatever. They're not better than the Astros. We know that. They're not better than the Astros. The Astros have had a rather, you know, historic season in a way. and a historic run in a way. The numbers are really off the charts of what they've been over the last few seasons. How many games above 500 they've been, right? The kind of pitchers that they have, the kind of hitters that they've had, the kind of run differentials that they've had over the last 3 years in building this juggernaut team. And sometimes when a champion is crowned, again, sometimes you get the better story, but sometimes you get the better team. And I think if the Astros win tonight, most of America is going to sit back and go, you know what? This is the way it probably should have been all along. This was a really, really good baseball team that had all of these things working for them, and they should be crowned champions of baseball. Now, granted, that's not how we like sports a lot of the times. Our fascination with the NCAA tournament is proof of that, right? We love the underdog, we want the underdog, but you know, not the best. The best team doesn't always win that, right? But in this situation, I think the better team is the Astros. And I think when it's all said and done, we'll say that was a defining exclamation point on the 2019 season. The best team went out and got better with the acquisition of Zach Greinke. They were already good. They were already favored. They should win the World Series, and they did win the World Series. And if they do win it, like I told people, calm down after they were 0-2. Saw this with the Yankees in 96. It'll play out exactly the way the Yankees did it. Except the Yankees were more of an underdog than the Astros were in this series. But this should still be a good pitching matchup tonight with Strasburg. He's got a very good chance of extending the series. He's got a very good chance of putting on his own sort of paint onto this masterpiece to see where this goes. But if it doesn't happen, I think this is a testament to the resiliency of the Astros, who didn't beat themselves up after losing the first two games at Minute Maid Park, didn't beat themselves up when they couldn't hit, didn't beat themselves up when they couldn't score runners that were on base, all of those things. And didn't beat themselves up when their two best pitchers lost those games in the first two games of the World Series. Had a day between the travel and got to Washington and reset everything. And boy, did they ever reset everything. Remember, they won two games in D.C. with Zach Greinke and Jose Urquidy. And these were supposed to be the two weaker links to the Astros rotation. That the idea was, and Zach Greinke is a great pitcher. We were saying that all playoffs. When he was struggling against the Rays, and when he was struggling against the Yankees, we would say over and over again, remember though, he's Zach Greinke. He can turn it on at any moment. He can turn and switch and give you seven solid innings, striking out double figures, whatever it is that you need. He can do that. He's capable of doing that. That's not out of the realm of possibility. He's just not doing it now. But when you look back and you saw the numbers, what was the plan? Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander were going to get you the four wins you were going to need in a seven-game series. How that was going to take place is all up to how the pitcher rotation was and when A.J. Hinch was going to use them in whatever game. But Cole and Verlander were supposed to give you the four wins that you were going to need. So when the Nationals got the first two games beating Cole and Verlander, it was okay to predict that, well, if Greinke struggles, Jose Urquidy or a bullpen game for the Astros in game four could be problematic. Who knows? But that's, you know, when the bats come alive and you give your pitcher some help and the pitchers actually do a great job, like Urquidy did, he was great. Then it allows you as a team to go, wait a minute, we just took two games with our 3-4 group, in our pitching rotation, our third and fourth guy, and now we go back to our 1-2 guy. So when Cole pitches really good in game five, and now you got Verlander in game six, credit to the Astros for not panicking going into Washington, pressing that they couldn't score runners on base. They did a great job in D.C. They got great pitching, held the Nationals in check. Washington couldn't hit. They couldn't score runners either. I mean, the big debate in game, three was Anibal Sanchez going up to the plate. Davey Martinez not pitch inning for him in a situation. And Sanchez wasn't pitching lights out in the game to warrant going back out there in the sixth inning. So, again, does Washington have the better story? Yeah. Do the Astros the better team? Yes. And if the Astros do win this, you'll feel some sort of, I don't know, the stars lined up, planets lined up perfectly for a team in this season. Boy, have they done it right, man. They have done it right. You know, build, build, build. Go find the young players. Build a team. Go get the good free agents. Make the right trades. Don't go crazy. Do it the right way. And next thing you know, you're going to win a couple of World Series championships. And then, in the offseason, figure out how you're going to pay Gerrit Cole. Because you're going to need to pay Gerrit Cole. All right, coming up, an interesting college football dilemma that could occur on the 9th of November. We could be watching something that makes us go, ooh, I wonder how this will play out in the end. I'll tell you what it is next. As we roll along on a Tuesday on SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All righty, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. I still got a raspy voice. Should I go to the doctors?
Maybe.
I don't know. It's been like 2 weeks.
Sound better.
I am. I mean, it's getting better and better, but I don't like it.
You got that like old boxer announcer or person who breaks down boxing fights sound to it. Who's had one too many cigars in his day?
I know. Oh, like the late Bert Sugar, who I used to love.
That's who I was.
Bert Sugar
talking about
was my favorite interview. He used to get him on all the time because he would do interviews with anybody. And I did many interviews with Bert Sugar. And I was a big, we had a really, I don't know, man. It was just, he was so fun to talk to. You could just talk to him for a really long time, and he would just go off on everything you wanted to talk about in terms of boxing. It was fantastic. But yeah, you're right. But I don't know. My wife is always like, "You still got that?" And I go, "Yeah, I still got that."
She doesn't like the smoky sound to your
voice.
I don't
know. That's what I'm thinking, right? I think it sounds all right.
There's texture to your tone.
That's right. That is correct. All right. So November 9th, Alabama's playing LSU.
Yes.
Hear me out on this one. Okay.
I'm ready for it.
This is going to make a lot of people around the country go, no, 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 no. We're not doing that. But maybe we are. Let's say Alabama and LSU 1-2 in the country play a barn burner of a game. Tua's back. Joe Burrow's great. Both teams play great. Somebody's got to lose and somebody does lose. Whoever loses is going to sit with one loss. And if they run out and run the table to the rest of the season, and both teams run the table for the rest of the season, that team that loses is not going to go to Atlanta to play for the SEC championship. As a matter of fact, they're going to be home. Now, if that team that wins that game, and let's just say it's Alabama just for the sake of it. Let's say it's Alabama. And they go to Atlanta and they win the SEC championship. They beat Georgia or Florida. And they are going to punch their ticket into the playoff. What happens to LSU with one loss? Are you going to tell me that they're not one of the four best teams in college football? Do we really need that extra game? Now, that's something to really consider. Now, I know a lot of people don't like the idea of the SEC getting two teams into this playoff, and they don't like the idea of you not winning your conference division or your conference championship and getting into the college football playoff. But if the committee is absolutely determined to give us the four best teams, they've done this before. They did it with Alabama before. Can't they do it again? What I mean, Ohio State, Baylor is unbeaten, but give me the other teams that are going to be better than LSU. Clemson. Give me the other teams that would be better than a one-loss LSU team if they lose in Tuscaloosa to Alabama. And that's their only blemish. And the game was close and tight. Tell me who it's going to be. Because I don't see it. Joe Burrow, as we've said before and many times, Joe Burrow is on another level. Right? It means taking LSU to another place in terms of the passing offense. And it's working and it looks fantastic and it looks great. And they look just so different, and it's so refreshing to see them play this different way. At least for me, I enjoy seeing them play this way. But winning at Tuscaloosa and beating Nick Saban in Alabama, if Tua is healthy and plays, it's a tough task. And many teams have tried to do it, and many teams haven't been able to do it. So let's say you get an LSU team that goes there, gives Alabama all the run they possibly could, and it's a game for the ages. Now, many of you remember when this actually did take place before the college football playoff, and it didn't work out the way that people thought it was supposed to work out. Ah, let's go back, shall we? To the 2006 Ohio State-Michigan game. Well, that was 1-2, And that was a classic. And that was a game in which both teams gave everything they possibly could. And in the end, what happened? Everybody thought that there would be a rematch for the national championship. But that didn't take place. Instead, Florida got in. Now, I still contend, and you probably have heard me say this, but I still contend that I think one of the main reasons that Florida, who ended up winning the SEC championship by beating Arkansas, and then watched, I think, USC lost to UCLA that weekend, sort of helped their case. But I still contend that one of the reasons that Florida got in over Michigan was that Lloyd Carr didn't publicly campaign for his team. He was a coach that basically said, no, our resume is what our resume is. You determine it. We stand by everything we've done. And Florida, Urban Meyer was willing to go on television show after television show and say, we did this, we did this, we did this, and we did this. And he was willing to point out a lot of the things that Florida had done during that season with Chris Leak at quarterback and this young freshman named Tim Tebow, who was like this very versatile type of player. But defensively, they were this. Offensively, they were this, et cetera, et cetera. And I think when it came down to just the top two, I think there were voters that liked what they liked Florida's resume a little bit. And at the time, we were very, very pulled away from the idea of seeing a rematch for the national championship. We didn't really want to see that. Now, later on, we got it when LSU and Alabama played again after they played during the regular season. But at that time, I don't think people wanted to see it. But nevertheless, the legitimate argument was, here are the number one and number two teams in the nation. One of them lost, but one of them was very respected in the way they lost. And maybe this game should happen again. However, on the other side, there was an idea that Ohio State that won that game shouldn't have to play Michigan again for higher stakes. They had already beaten the Wolverines. And by beating the Wolverines, they earned a number one spot and the right to play for the BCS National Championship. In this case, it's a little different. Because in this case, the committee goes, we want four of the best teams, regardless of how this would eventually play out. We want the four best teams. And I know that there is no system in place, because we're so accustomed to it in other sports, right? Where in other sports, you earn your way in. There's a whole list of ways you get into the playoffs in baseball. There's a whole list of ways it comes down to tiebreakers in the NFL. There's a whole list of tiebreakers in the NBA, right? We know how the formula works. But only in college basketball, college baseball, college football, the three major collegiate sports, there's kind of a committee that determines who's getting in and who's not getting in. And sometimes there's a criteria for it in college basketball. Win your conference tournament, you get into the big dance. And if not, well, then you better be one of these teams and you better have this kind of RPI and et cetera, et cetera. But you're still under the scrutiny of the committee. In this case, there is nothing. There is no guaranteed spot. We can say all we want that the SEC champion is automatically getting in, and they are, but it's not automatic. It's not automatic on paper. It's the four best teams based on what that committee determines. And so tell me and sell me another program that's going to have one loss that's better than LSU. Now, if you get an unbeaten team, great, fine. That's take it. But tell me the one loss team, even if they win their conference tournament, championship, I should say. I keep thinking basketball. Even if they win their conference championship, tell me the one loss team that would be better than either one of those two teams playing in Tuscaloosa in 2 weeks. If that game turns out to be a back and forth affair where neither one of the opponents disrespected themselves.
I think the only way either of these teams don't make it in, if it's an absolute blowout.
Exactly.
If LSU is able to throw like 50 points up on Alabama or vice versa, then I think you have the argument of, you did have that really bad loss. And that might be tough to overcome. But like what you're saying, if it's back and forth and, at the end of the day, one team has to lose, they're both in. They have to be.
That's the way it's going to play out. Now, it's going to make people mad because people don't like this.
If not, then you're doing a disservice to the college football playoff. Well, you want the four best teams in the country.
Exactly. So if you say, well, we're going to take Clemson from the ACC, Ohio State from the Big Ten, Alabama, if they win the SEC from the SEC, and let's dive in there and let's grab Oregon from the Pac-12. Well, Oregon's got a loss. Yep. If Oregon runs the table and doesn't lose again, wins the Pac-12 with one loss, tell me how they're better than LSU with one loss.
Or like you pointed out, Baylor's undefeated.
Right, if Baylor wins out.
Nobody wants to see Baylor.
Come on, tell me Baylor is a better team than LSU, yeah, even if they go undefeated and wins the Big 12.
Not gonna.
You can't. You can't sell it. Because, and again, this is all speculated on the fact that LSU and Alabama are playing. If both teams play really well, both teams, you know, kind of like we talked about with LSU-Texas. Remember when that game happened in week two? And we said, look, both of these teams, neither one of them, you know, neither one of them should be disappointed. One won, one lost, but both of them played respectable. If Alabama and LSU comes down to a respectable, fun game where both teams showed up and both teams played hard and both teams played well and another team just made one more play, well, all right, tell you know, find me again the one lost team. Now, is it unfair that Alabama or LSU, one of those teams, could go into the championship game and get upset or beaten by a good Georgia or Florida team? And I use upset lightly. Well, no, I mean it isn't, but that's just the way college football is right now. We don't like people sitting back and going, we don't have to play the extra game and we got in anyway. We remember how much we butchered Notre Dame for that? Oh, way to go, Notre Dame. You're just sitting back and everybody else is taking a risk having to play a conference championship game and you don't have to as an independent. You know, I mean, we tend to do that.
Here's a quick question for you, and I really don't know the answer. Does college football flex games?
I don't think they do. They flex times.
I mean, that's what I'm saying, flex times.
Yeah, they do it. There's a TBD they can sometimes it's scheduled in the afternoon. It gets moved. Happens a lot.
Okay, because they definitely need to flex this one.
Oh, Alabama LSU?
Yeah.
What time is it scheduled?
Right now it's scheduled for 2:30.
Oh, 2:30 Eastern time or 2:30 Central?
2:30 Central.
Oh no, that's got to be a night game.
Yeah, the to be determined games right now for that Saturday are Maryland, Ohio State, Baylor, TCU, Iowa, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Kansas State, Texas.
Well, well, well.
This one has a hard time of 2:30. Alabama right now, 16-point favorites.
Okay. Alabama's a 16-point favorite in the game? That seems really high.
Yeah.
Really? 16-point favorite.
I'm reading that right. It says minus 16.
Yep, minus 16. That's right. That's right. Wow, that's really high. But again, spreads are spreads.
Yeah, but this game, I mean, this has to be 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night, right?
Oh, this should be a great, fun Tuscaloosa night game.
This should be your Saturday night.
Yeah. Well, there's a little bit more that go on, and I guess when it comes to college games, scheduling them and all of that, and rights and television rights and all of those things, but still, because some of these teams, you know,
is CBS throwing like a holiday special that night.
Yeah, no, it's a good one.
They can't opt out. Like, you know what? We can forego the rerun of Big Bang Theory marathon.
I'm looking really quick to find CBS has got the game. Where is CBS got the game? Like, what's their night game? So you got LSU, Alabama. I'll find that after we come back, because I really do. I want to know what CBS has got on their slate that night that they can't switch this bad boy over. All right, it's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's on SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So we looked up the schedule for the Week 11 games. And that's Saturday, Alabama LSU, 2:30 Central. And there's nothing else on CBS scheduled for the remainder of the night, except whatever they have on their primetime schedule.
Immediately after the game says local programming. That's normal. But 7 o'clock, their primetime schedule for Saturday night is NCIS New Orleans.
Is that a hit show for them?
I have no idea. I thought that was like a midweek show.
Me too.
By the way. And then at 8 p.m., they have All Rise.
Okay. So that's a new show they've got on their fall schedule.
And they don't want to combat. Let's see. Fox actually will be having college football going on. They don't want to go up against. They would dominate if they went up against Fox.
Yeah, completely.
I don't care what team, what game Fox is throwing at us.
2:30 seems like a little early for a game like that. 1 versus 2 seems a little early. Get the tailgating going.
Yeah.
You know? Well, nevertheless, that still is going to be great.
Nah, it's going to be a good game. It's going to be great.
I love those. I just love those big-time college football games. You know, it's still a very local sport. But it doesn't have the national presence like the NFL does. It doesn't have the national numbers, but they do have really good numbers. But I mean those special big time atmosphere games, you know, it's just, there's nothing quite like it. I mean, it really isn't. So, my wife went out and bought a whole bunch of large candy bars for Halloween.
You're doing it.
Now we are doing it. Now we made these goodie bags, these Halloween goodie bags. We made like 120 of them, and then my wife posted on our housing district, you know, little community that we live in.
Yeah,
we have a Facebook page, and then somebody said, "Oh, you might need to make more." Last year we ran out, and so that my wife panicked and ran to the store and bought a whole bunch of big size candy bars. She's afraid we're going to have to tell kids we don't have any more candy. I said, we're not going to do that. I said, I'll tell you why we're not going to do that. Both you and I are going to be around. I said, if we're down to like 20, one of us will go to the store and buy the last remaining bags of candy.
You don't want to do that.
Why not?
You don't want to go to the store on Halloween night. You know how hard it is?
If I have to, I have to. I'm not going to tell the kids no.
No, but I'm saying, you know how hard it is to drive through a neighborhood when there's full of trick-or-treaters?
Yeah, that's true.
You gotta drive you gotta drive.
But I don't wanna buy 10 bags of candy. And then, I mean, I like candy, don't get me wrong, but I don't need it.
No, that's,
I don't want 10 bags of candy that I end up donating, I have to give away, you know. I want the right amount that leaves my house, leaves me with a little bit more, and that's it. But I'm a little nervous. Halloween, I might run out.